This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
First up on the show today is Amanda Weller chatting to Stephanie Forster, a humanist celebrant who creates personal bespoke humanist wedding and naming ceremonies and also funerals and memorials.
Today, it's an absolute delight to welcome you, Stephanie Forster, to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I have my very first question. I have to say, I'm just very curious. The name of your website and your business, Silver Bee Ceremonies, where did that come from?
I think when I was starting up the company, I wanted something that kind of reflected nature. And I would just kind of write down loads of different ideas. And that one just kind of sort of reached out to me, really. And then I showed them to my husband and he picked, and I had about 30 that I'd selected, and he picked the same one. So I thought, that's it. I'm not going to ask anybody else. It's going to be Silver Bee Ceremonies.
It's such a perfect name, knowing what you do, which I haven't actually explained. Would you like to explain what it is that you do?
Sure, yes. So I'm a humanist celebrant. So I help families and couples celebrate special moments in their lives by creating and delivering non-religious ceremonies for weddings, for baby namings, and for funerals. So I really kind of help people celebrate those kind of moments that we should be kind of recognising in our lives.
Yes, absolutely. And interesting times at the moment with all these kind of things as well, which we can come on to talking about in a minute. So how long have you been a humanist celebrant? For a long time? Have you?
No, I'm relatively new to it, really. I started my celebrant journey in 2017 when I decided to undertake trainings in weddings, first of all. And then once I'd done the weddings training and had a bit of experience of that, I then went on to train in namings and in funerals as well. So it was this time last year that I finished my funerals training.
Okay. So what sort of, what does the training involve? Is it a, because you're dealing with people in all sorts of different situations. I mean, there's a lot actually that could be thrown up that you might have to deal with, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. So to be accepted as a humanist celebrant, you have to be interviewed first to see that you kind of have the values that they're looking for and the right kind of approach. And then once you're accepted onto the training, it's a 5-day course. So you cover all different, for say the weddings training, all different aspects of conducting a ceremony, the kind of things that you should be including in your script, practicing writing, practicing delivering the scripts, and then how you stage manage everybody as part of the ceremony to kind of make it run smoothly. And you have a mentor who will take you to observe ceremonies that they're doing and to go along with them to family visits. So you get a really full experience as to what's required of you, and kind of get as much sort of knowledge as possible before you start your actual kind of work as a celebrant.
My goodness, I mean, there are many different strands there. You say you started this in 2017. Did you have skills that you could transfer from a previous existence?
Yes, I suppose I did, really, because my background is in marketing communications. And I've worked across different sectors, most recently in the NHS for the last 15 years doing marketing communications. So I've always done a lot of writing. I love, words are my thing. And I really like kind of poetry and that kind of stuff as well. And I've done a lot of event management and presenting and that kind of thing. So all of those are really kind of helpful, transferable skills. And I think working in the NHS within mental health, you get to understand a lot of sort of different people's life experiences and can work with people from kind of all different backgrounds. So that was a really kind of valuable experience to kind of bring with me into this role.
Absolutely. My goodness. Yes. So you definitely had experience that would be useful from the yes. outset then, didn't you? Yes. Of so many different aspects to this. Do you have you have these three different angles: the weddings, the naming ceremonies, and the celebrating of somebody's somebody's life. All very different, wonderful, and very different. Is there one that you enjoy doing more?
I think I like the variety, really. I think weddings probably are my favourite, because I suppose I started with weddings, and obviously they're such wonderful, happy occasions. And it's nice to be able to make a ceremony that's really personal for the couple. And so I include their love story together, some secret words about what they love about most each other that I kind of reveal as part of the ceremony. And then the sort of special moments where we do the vows and the ring exchange if they're doing that. And then the sort of symbolic gestures that they might want, such as a hand fasting or Jewish smashing of the glass at the end of the ceremony. All those sorts of things are really kind of great to kind of create into a very personal service for the couple. And a lot of people who are quite sort of sceptical about a celebrant-led wedding kind of get to the end of it and they say, oh, wow, that was absolutely amazing. So it's nice for people to be able to experience a very different sort of scenario for the wedding.
Yes, amazing. One thing actually you just mentioned that I really wanted to ask you about, the hand fasting. I hadn't heard of that. What is that?
Oh, okay. So it's where the old traditional kind of quotes of tying the knot and binding agreement originate.
Okay.
So back in time, before we exchanged wedding rings, couples used to actually be bound together with ropes or cord before the wedding. And then they were literally, their hands were tied together. And that was part of their kind of wedding ceremony. And so it's a bit of a nod to kind of that tradition. So the couple hold hands and you put ribbons around the hands. And then you either say a hand blessing or they make some promises whilst the ribbons are tied around their hands. And then they pull their hands out and it kind of creates a love knot in the middle, which is really nice. Bit of magic for the guests as well.
How wonderful. Oh, that's, yes. So you've got the theatre there as well as the
yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing. I wish I'd known about that. Maybe we'll have to redo something. Call
yes,
you in.
Yeah.
And so with your, let's take marriages. Is this, am I right in saying this is still not, from a humanist perspective, something that is legally binding, or has that changed now?
No, that's right. Next week, actually, six couples are taking their cases to the High Court to look at making them legally recognised, whereas at the moment they aren't. And the feeling is that a humanist ceremony should be recognised in the same way that other religious ceremonies are, such as a Jewish ceremony that's not held in church but is still recognised. And if people choose to have a kind of a non-religious humanist ceremony, then that ought to be recognised as being legally binding as well. So yes, fingers crossed for the High Court next week. But Northern Ireland and Scotland, humanist weddings are legally binding there. So it's kind of time that England kind of got on board, really.
Definitely. Well, there's a precedent then, isn't there, within, you know, locally?
Yes.
Yeah. How interesting. Oh, well, I'm glad I asked that question. So the end, you know, it could be changing really very soon then, because if the High Court rules, then that's it, is it? It just becomes...
It does still need government to kind of give it the go ahead.
Yes. Yeah.
And that then might take a little while. But they're pretty confident that the High Court will rule in favour of the ceremonies becoming legally binding. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic. That's a real sort of seems like a real step forward and something that should have been done ages ago, actually, to me.
There's over 1,000 couples a year that choose a humanist ceremony. So there are a lot of people that, despite the fact it's not legally binding yet, still choose to have that kind of ceremony so they can celebrate where they want to, in the way that they want to. And it's kind of entirely up to them to work with the celebrant on what they'd like included in the service.
So when you're, with regard to location, there are places that are kind of official, you know, have been given the go-ahead as places to hold weddings, aren't there? Converted barns and things like that. So I presume you do events there, but also I was wondering, you know, where... Have you had some peculiar and interesting places that you've had to hold had the joy of holding these?
Certainly interesting and fun places. Nothing too peculiar. One of my first weddings was in a woodland copse in Berkshire, which was absolutely gorgeous. They'd kind of got it all set up with kind of lights and bunting, and there was a real kind of lovely vibe to it. Different areas of the woodland had different parts of the day, so they had the kind of social area, separate area for the wedding, and then where they were going to then sort of, they had some teepees where people could stay over if they wanted to as well. So that was absolutely gorgeous. And we had a fire ceremony as part of the wedding, whereas at the end, the couple lit the fire, and then all the guests were invited to place wooden discs into the fire with the couple's initials on and kind of make a wish for the couple as they put the disc into the fire. So that was lovely.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And I have done quite a few in sort of people's sort of family-owned farms, paddocks and those sorts of things. So lots of ceremonies outdoors. Yeah. And I did one for a couple whose family owned a little island on the Thames near Henley, which was lovely. So that was really special.
Yeah. How amazing. So you've got to really see some interesting places. I saw on your website that you love to travel. Have you managed to do any abroad yet, or are you still waiting for those calls?
Yes, still hoping for those. Yes.
Well, do you know, you put it out there on your website very clearly, so I'm sure they'll come in. So anybody listening who wants to get married somewhere wonderful, the other side of the channel or beyond, ring your bell. But you do go into crematoriums for funerals or for your humanist funerals, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And I think lots of people don't realise that you can have any type of service that you like within a crematorium. It doesn't have to be a religious ceremony. And that's kind of how I got into it in the first place, actually. When my dad died 6 years ago, we knew that we wanted a non-religious ceremony. But we didn't really know how do you go about that, what happens. And then when we went to the funeral directors, they said, oh, no, you can have, you know, a kind of non-religious celebrant. And we then had a humanist, and I kind of hadn't heard of humanism before. So I kind of looked into it and thought, oh, this is interesting. And from that then decided to kind of do the training. So it did feel like kind of a gift that my dad gave me, really, to kind of this whole new career.
Yes.
Path in life. So going back to the point about the crematorium, you can have a non-religious service and choose music that is reflective of the person that you're celebrating, songs that they like. So I've done everything from Wagner to Meatloaf. anything goes, really. And they can be real celebrations. At the beginning of the year, I did a funeral for a lady who was in her 90s and had a really kind of fulfilled and happy life. And her daughter wanted it to be a real celebration. And we started the funeral service in the crematorium with a glass of champagne and a toast to her. And that just kind of set the scene for the whole service, really. And it was very kind of uplifting, and lots of people, I think, really felt that it was a great way to remember her.
Oh, it sounds amazing. Sounds amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think a lot of people don't really realise that this humanist option is out there, I have to say. Yeah. Very, really, really interesting. And do you write much of, is it a joint thing, or do you do quite a lot of the actual writing and the scribing and the suggesting and then let's tweak? Mm. How does that, I presume that must depend on who you're dealing with and how does that work?
Yes, so it does depend a lot on the family. The vast majority, I write it all. So I would normally meet with the family. At the moment, we're doing kind of Zoom and Google Meet calls instead of face-to-face. And I would just kind of talk about the person, find out all about them and their character and their kind of their life story, and kind of what sort of things were important to them and their values. And from that, then I would craft the script, including the eulogy. And then I would share that with the family to make sure that they're happy with it, and then tweak anything that they want to. And often I'll suggest poems or readings that I think will suit the person, because a lot of the time the family doesn't particularly have anything in mind. So once I've heard all about them, then I can kind of come up with things that I think are really fitting for them, whether it's something that suits a hobby, such as bowling or kind of being a motorbike enthusiast, or it's just something about the fact that actually they were a lovely mum. Mm-hmm. And that you can kind of relay that through some lovely kind of poetry and words. So if families want to write the eulogy themselves or want to do tributes themselves, then obviously they're welcome to do that. And that's always really lovely when I can kind of give the overall story about somebody, and then grandchildren come and talk about their, you know, their kind of memories of granny, that kind of thing. That's always a really nice moment. But I do write things for family members to say as well, because, you know, I've kind of met families where they really want to say something themselves, but they couldn't think about how they're going to put pen to paper. So I say that, you know, don't worry, that's what I'm here for. In the way I think you would say it, and then you can have a look and see what you think. And it's nice to be able to help people in those times when they're really got, you know, so much going on, and they're really suffering. Yeah. So it just takes some of that worry and that burden away, which is nice to be able to do.
Definitely. Amazing. It's an amazing thing that you're doing. Absolutely amazing. And do you know, and also amazingly, we've run out of time already. I have so many other questions I wanted to ask. However, I'll have to wait for another time. Stephanie Forster, how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way?
The best way probably is just to Google me. So if you look up Silverbee Ceremonies, then there's my website. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. So lots of different ways you can contact me through any of those channels.
That's absolutely wonderful. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute delight to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio,